We're joined now by NBA Today host from Sirius XM, Justin Termini. Good morning, Justin.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. You know, as much as anything, I mean, nothing should shock you about the trades coming up to the trade deadline. But, I mean, of all people, I mean, here you have a guy who just signed to a long-term contract. They made him feel like he's the future and he's going to be the greatest player in the history of the franchise. And I mean, they're not even a year old and he's gone. Is that shocking to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking yesterday as it started to develop. And $173 million, they're telling him he's the greatest Clipper of all time, as you mentioned. I was going to be a lifelong Clipper. They take the banner down when they're trying to pitch him last year. I guess he was having some attitude issues behind the scenes as well that were starting to get sick of. I worked with Eddie Johnson. He's a former Sixth Man of the Year. He's got some connections there within the Clippers organization. And he's harped on how things have been difficult this year between Blake and the team. But I still never anticipated that that they'd be dealing him, especially to Detroit.
Well, he didn't have that no trade protection, so I find that interesting. I get it from the Pistons' perspective in that I think they need to market a star. I think that's been a real struggle for a long, long time now. New building, they're only at about 78% capacity, Justin, and they got 9 of their next 10 at home. But I think there's something there. This deal will get worse before it gets better, but they're a better team the second they hit the floor tonight, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. The reason that this deal makes sense for them is only because it brings them star power. And you look at everybody else in the Eastern Conference, I mean, they have something to sell. The Celtics have Kyrie Irving. He's a guy you can market. The Raptors are not only a good team, they've got two pretty good guys in DeRozan and Lowry. You know, you've got LeBron in Cleveland. You've got Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee, John Wall in Washington. Philadelphia's got those two young studs in Simmons and Embiid. There's nobody to market in Detroit. Now this gives them a guy to market. I don't know how much better it makes him as far as making the playoffs this year, and certainly, you know, 3 or 4 years down the line when you're paying him almost $40 million, it's going to hurt you, but at least it gives you somebody that's going to put people in the seats.
This is just the tip of the iceberg. It won't be long before Lou Williams and DeAndre Jordan are gone, that the Clippers will empty out. They're looking to the future here. They're looking towards when all these free agents are available to them. Does this happen for them? Do guys think of the Clippers as an organization that they're going to go to be a winner a couple of years from now?
Yeah, I mean, when I think of the Clippers, I think of the worst organization, maybe not just in the NBA, but all of sports. And I don't see how this necessarily gets people to go there based on they want to play with other guys. And right now they're emptying the deck. So is LeBron going to want to go to play there if nobody else is there? Is just, you know, having enough for two cap, max cap guys with LeBron and, say, Paul George enough to get him to beat the Warriors? I don't think it is. I mean, I guess the one benefit they have is that it's the market. I mean, L.A., that's where guys want to live. It's different than having the cap space and say Detroit, since we're talking about them, or having the cap space in, you know, Orlando or, you know, Indiana, because guys want to live in L.A. So they will get some guys to go there, but I don't think that it puts them, you know, as one of the top two or three teams in the Western Conference.
Justin Termini joining us. Let me ask you about the T-Wolves. They're here tonight. I know a bit of a, you know, sad performance last night in Atlanta, but they're fun. They're very, very watchable. They're going to break this playoff drought. They haven't been to the playoffs in 14 years. They haven't won a playoff series since Kevin Garnett was 27 years old and was still with the T-Wolves. Their potential this year to you, we look at meaty first round matchups in the West. They could play OKC. They could play New Orleans. They could certainly make things really fun playing a Houston or San Antonio in the second round. What's their upside this spring?
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, New Orleans obviously just lost Cousins, so that's a team they could beat, and I think New Orleans will fall out of the picture a little bit. But they meet Oklahoma City. They could lose in the first round based off the fact Oklahoma City's been the second-best team in the NBA since December 1st and has really started to get their act together with especially Russell Westbrook, who's kind of entered the back end of the MVP race again. Jimmy Butler's been fantastic. He's been a top five or six MVP candidate. Carl Anthony Towns has been great as well. The one concern there, despite the fact they're playing well, is the guy who's from up your way, Andrew Wiggins, has not developed as you would anticipated or hoped he would have developed. I mean, he's a volume scorer. His defense hasn't been great, even though you thought that he had the skill set coming out of college to do that. He doesn't rebound the ball. He doesn't set teammates up. So his development has really been stunted here under Tom Thibodeau, but everything else about that team has been great.
Wondering your impression on the Raptors as they are currently constituted. Good enough to get through the East, or you see them doing something at the trade deadline, adding a valuable piece?
Yeah, I don't know if they do anything at the trade deadline, but they are good enough to get out of the East. In past years, I mean, as you guys know, to me, they've been one of those teams where it's like, wake me up in April, May, and June, because every time they get to the postseason, they just flat out fail. Even when they've gotten past multiple, you know, I know they lost to the Nets 4 years ago in the first round when they were the favorite team in 7 games. Then they get swept by Washington embarrassingly. And even when they've got out of the first and second round, it's been a struggling against a bad Indiana team, same against Miami, and then getting blown out against Cleveland. I think this team's a little bit different just because they've changed the offensive philosophy, where you're starting to shoot the three ball a little bit more, especially with DeRozan. They're passing the ball a lot more. So with the way Cleveland has struggled, Boston's unproven and really doesn't have a second score unless Hayward comes back. I mean, they have a chance this year to get to the finals.
Yeah, I isolate those teams that I worry about with Toronto, and even talking yesterday, a 2-7 against Detroit. I don't think they're going to lose that series, Justin, but it can be a little more taxing. And we've seen teams in those first rounds, if they get taxed a little bit and they get pushed, it's more of a struggle. I mean, you want to do it like all these LeBron teams have and roll through and win the first 8 of 9 games or win the first 8 period.
Yeah.
And get to the conference finals without all that travel back and forth. The bodies are already pretty weary by mid-April, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that's the one part about the Eastern Conference right now is it's starting to get a little bit more difficult. I mean, for the last, really the last 20 years, the East has been a joke, so you always get a free pass in that first round. That's not the case anymore. I mean, now a team like Philadelphia Philadelphia, when Embiid plays, has a better record than Cleveland. I mean, that's the clip that they're winning at. I mean, that's a dangerous team. Same thing with Washington, Milwaukee at the back end of the Eastern Conference. I actually think the back end of the East for the first time in 15, 20 years is actually more dangerous than the back end of the Western Conference. The front end of the Western Conference is still more dangerous, but the East is pretty good 1-8 right now.
It's amazing getting different points of view because not everyone's pointing in the same direction. Before we let you go, do you have a feeling for LeBron's landing spot after this year?
Yeah, I mean, I really have no feeling. I mean, I still think I can't envision him leaving the Eastern Conference because he has such an easy path over the years. Now, the East is getting better, as we just talked about, but you go somewhere in the West, I mean, you're still not going to get by Golden State. I don't care who he teams up with. Outside of going to Houston and teaming up with Harden and Chris Paul, you're not getting past Golden State. They're just too historically good. So I would assume that he would stay in the East, most likely Cleveland, get that almost free. This year it might not be a free pass, but get that easier pass to the finals so we can at least say, hey, listen, I made it to the finals, 7-8 consecutive years. So I still think that it'd be difficult to envision him leaving the East.
And if that's the case, so why wouldn't he go to management right now and say, look, I'm staying, use that draft choice. Now it would make sense to use that draft choice and get a better player, Brooklyn's pick. Yeah,
I think he's doing that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I blame him for this. I mean, a lot of people say, well, Dan Gilbert's got to use that pick, or Colby Alden, the GM's got to use that pick, get something. You don't use that pick unless, and we talk to David Griffin every week, and we're going to talk to him on Wednesday, their former GM. He says, I wouldn't use that pick unless LeBron commits to me that he's going to stay, and he obviously hasn't done that yet.